Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. On the show today, we're going to talk a little about canola production. But even if you are not a canola grower, I'm sure you're still going to get quite a few things out of the show. Many of the topics we have for canola are very similar to what we have in other crops, including fertility, weed control, insect control, disease control, just how you turn a profit, especially in some tougher markets. And, you know, as I say that, I've been thinking a lot about this lately, that we have just entered a new decade. It's a new decade now. We've turned the page on 2019. For many of us, thankfully, we've gotten past 2019. But, you know, 2020, hopefully, is going to be a great year. And I guess I just feel like, as a farmer, you always have to be optimistic that this year is going to be good. Now, if, let's say, you're faced with some challenges going into the year, you still have some crop yet to harvest from last year, you didn't get all your fall fertilizer on, some of those issues, you just have to start planning right now on, hey, what else can I do to have a good crop this year, even though I've already got a few things that are stacked up against me? That's fine. There are plenty of ways to be successful on the farm. So anyway, we'll talk about a little bit of that as well today and get to your questions later on in the Ag PhD mailbag. If you'd like to call in during the show, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We are live in the Morton studio today. Darren, I think you've been talking about, what is it, corn breeding so far today?
Well, yeah, and you know, there's a lot of questions around corn hybrids and choosing the right ones and so forth. One of the interesting things, though, going into 2020 is many times in the Western Corn Belt, growers are talking about drought. And what's the drought tolerance? What's the stress tolerance on this?
Yep.
I was talking to a corn breeder this morning, and he said, you know, I can't really tell you what the drought tolerance is on this hybrid. And I said, well, why not? He goes, because we've had it in plots for 3 years, and we haven't missed a rain yet.
Right.
And he said, I can tell you how it handles wet feet, and there's definitely some hybrids that can handle wet feet or soggy fields a little better than others. But he said, I really can't tell you what's going to happen. He goes, we've had some real short spells where we've dried out, and that's really been about it for some of these things. So it's going to be interesting going forward here for the next few years, because it's kind of like a big ship. You don't just turn that around in a hurry. Seed corn companies are putting in production plans right now that they're going to grow in 2020 to sell in 2021. And all of a sudden, if they figure out, oh, those three big hybrids for our company really can't handle drought stress, if 2021 turns out to be a very dry year, and 2020 turns out to be a dry year, so there's demand for those drought-type hybrids, they may have a little challenge ahead of them. So the other thing that's concerning in the seed corn industry, Brandon, and this really hits us all as farmers, we're always looking at, well, what happened last year? What adjustments will I make? Because this year is going to be just like last year. So, oh, yeah, last year, well, it didn't work to do this. So I'm definitely not going to do that in 2020. Well, it might be a whole different year. And you do need to be prepared with not only plan A, but very likely plan B, and then worst case scenario, plan C. So you can pull the trigger. And all of a sudden, you know what? Planting gets delayed 2 weeks. Now we can start talking about, all right, what are my later planting options, instead of getting to that point and being, oh no, what am I going to do? You really do need to be prepared for that ahead. I know so often we go into seasons just assuming things are going to go mostly right, but we should be prepared. If last year taught us anything, that's one good lesson, that we could be prepared. It's more work to be prepared for those other situations, but it's a good thing to do that. And the seed corn breeders definitely caught that last year, where they saw many of their products getting pushed way out of their normal growing zone. Sometimes it turned out okay, but sometimes it didn't, and there's certainly lessons to learn.
Yep, I agree 100%. You know, when we talk about this last year, we did have a lot of disease pressure, and I mean, there were challenges in certain areas, so we did learn a lot about those things, to your point. All right, in terms of canola production, Darren, I think one of the biggest things here is we still have to take a look hard at soil fertility. And we talk about this all the time on the show, And usually we're talking corn and soybeans. But what we would encourage you to do, I don't care what crop it is exactly, but take a look at the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. And when you go to that, based on, you know, yes, usually we're talking corn and soybeans, but you can do the same thing with canola. You can punch in canola and whatever your yield is, and then take a look at that. And what is your crop going to need? Not just for N, P, and K, but also consider sulfur. How about even some of the micronutrients? Iron. Did you know that just to raise a decent canola crop, you need a fair amount of iron in the soil? Takes some zinc, takes a little bit of boron, manganese, copper. I mean, there are a lot of other things to be thinking about rather than just N, P, and K with any crop that you're raising out there. Now, here's the next thing that I'll throw out to you. When you're going to look at any of these removal charts for nutrients, it's going to probably give you a grain figure and a Stover figure. And here's basically what that means. Don't think that the Stover figure means that there's that much left in the Stover above ground. You always have to think about, hey, with Stover, half of my Stover is below ground. So in other words, if I bale up any residue from, I mean, we saw a lot this fall with corn stalks baled up, for example. Okay, if we take those corn stalks off, what's actually in there? You're going to have to test that. I don't know for sure. The Stover figure, the point is, it takes that much to produce all that tonnage of Stover, the roots, the stalks, the leaves, everything. And in terms of the grain column, it's how many nutrients does it take to produce all that grain based on your bushel yield goal. So you have to add together the grain and the Stover, and then there's the total column. So anyway, be looking at that all the time. But what we talk about is at a bare minimum, when you harvest a crop, you have to look at the grain removal, because with the grain, left that many, the grain took off that many nutrients off the field. So when you harvested that grain, took the grain off the field, a lot of nutrients just left. Yes, the Stover numbers might still be there, but that grain number's left. So make sure you're replacing fertility you removed. Well, we'll continue talking about canola production right after this on Ag PhD Radio.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic pesticides from Atticus LLC. Atticus offers a vast portfolio of branded generic fungicides, herbicides, and insecticides for row crops. Atticus puts grassroots experience and common sense logic to work to make product selection easier and on your terms. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, being able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Talking about canola production on our show, and also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can email us as well, radio@agphd.com. And you can find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty or Brian Hefty. Let's head up to North Dakota right now. We've got Pat Murphy with us, and Pat works a lot with the U.S. Canola Association, the Northern Canola Growers. Boy, you're a busy guy, Pat.
Well, yeah, we seem to stay pretty busy, I guess. There's always something going on, a fire to put out or whatever. But, yeah, I guess canola is something we follow pretty close, I guess.
All right, so let's talk about this year. I know in North Dakota, a lot of challenges with growers getting canola out. That's a little unusual, though, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. Usually canola harvest actually goes pretty good, and on the harvest side of it, it was a struggle this year. It was a struggle with everything. We ended up on our farm, when we started to get our big rains the first part of September, and we kind of just left our wheat stand, and then we went and started doing our canola. And this is the first year that we were all straight cut all of our canola this year, the first time ever. And actually, it was a blessing because we just didn't have much trouble getting it. When the weather got conducive, you know, we warm up a little bit, the canola would dry down, and we could harvest it. So it worked out very well. And we just finished hauling up the last of it the other day, and it was all dry, so it actually turned out pretty good, so we were pretty happy with it.
Outstanding. And, you know, with canola, I guess I'm probably talking to a good source of information on this question. What about demand? Is there demand that's driving more acres going in, or what's the situation right now with canola?
Well, I hate to quote numbers exact, but to my knowledge, that I think that the U.S. demand on canola for consumption and stuff increases, I think, in the six plus percent every year. It just keeps increasing. It's a high quality oil, a good healthy oil, and so the consumption keeps increasing all the time. So it's actually kind of supporting itself pretty well, I guess. Not much of the U.S. canola goes for export, if any. I think there may be some that goes into the biodiesel market and gets exported, but almost all of our production is, well, in fact, we use more canola in the U.S. than what we produce. We import a fair amount from Canada, I guess.
So interesting.
The demand is there. It's just getting northern growers and other parts to grow it, I guess, is probably our big push, I guess.
So where does it fit in the rotation for most growers then, Pat? Is this a two-crop, three-crop, four-crop rotation?
Well, that's a good question. I think we'd like to see it to be every third year or every fourth year on our farm. We try to go 3 to 4 years. It doesn't always work that way, but for the most part, we're trying to do that. I think you can start getting some disease issues, club root and some of that are starting to show up where they've pushed the rotation to every other year. I hear of guys in Canada, producers in Canada, going to every year, just continuous cropping canola. And that's kind of, we don't want that. We'd like, ideally, a 3 to 4 year rotation would be ideal. So, but yeah, it fits in great with wheat production and whatever. So our acres in North Dakota just keep increasing every year. It's just been, I think probably the biggest thing we have going now is all these NutriFlex varieties, Invigor varieties and stuff. They're really trying to get them so you can straight cut them without a lot of pod shatter. And that's really helped out on the production side of it.
Yeah, that is interesting. You know, when you see the demand rising every year and the seed company is starting to do a better job on the breeding and making some advances there, it really helps. You talked about the disease issues. How about weed control, Pat? What do you see in your part of North Dakota, and how does canola fit into your weed control program?
Well, soybeans have kind of been on the increase too, and so you've got the Roundup Ready soybeans or the Liberty soybeans, whichever you prefer, and then you've got you got another mode of action or whatever when you go to the Liberty, and some of that are probably our biggest weed pressure up in my area is in north central North Dakota. It's probably the kochia. You know, that can be such a battle to fight that thing, and so it really fits in good. We probably take take our canola that we that it would be the Liberty Link or Invigorate canola, and the weed control isn't as quite as good as it is on the Roundup or the Nutriflex, but then we'll just come in and then do a burn down on it in the fall after harvest again or before freeze up. But probably one of the big pests we're really concerned about is the flea beetle, the insect flea beetle. And the neonicotoids aren't, I don't know if they're not working as quite as well or if the pressure for the flea beetle is increasing. I'm not real sure. We always want to push our growers to get the canola planted early in the spring. Well, that, makes it a cool temperature wise when you're planting. So then in turn, your neonicotoids kind of wear off. And so then you'll end up spraying with whatever herbicide label to get the flea beetles after the crop is up. But they'll clean the canola, young canola field off overnight or in a short period of time. So you really got to watch the flea beetles. But I am concerned long-term that environmentals and whatever will take a look at this neonicotoid, give us a hard time on that. I think they're struggling in Canada. Now, the U.S. canola has come out in the past few years and been supportive of the program, along with some other chemical companies, to get your best management practices for bees, because that was kind of a pressure that was hurting us a little bit. And I think we've got some pretty good ideas there, and I think it can work just fine. So everybody's always kind of working on the problem, so I think we're doing pretty good.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on, no doubt about it, but the trend is forward and the trend is up, and that's fantastic for canola growers. Pat, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and thanks for sharing all the information.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You bet. Let's head out to Oregon. We've got Jason with us right now. Jason, how are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We're talking canola today, and it's fun because we get a lot of grief about, man, you guys are talking corn again. Why don't you talk something else? So when we look at canola, there are a lot of opportunities there for growers, and it's fun. Like Pat was detailing kind of how he's facing some of the challenges. How about in your growing area? What are some of the good things that with canola, and what are some of the challenges as well?
Well, in my immediate area, we're on the western side of the state. And it's all wholly different from the east side. The east side being...
In many ways, Jason, in many ways.
many ways. Okay, yeah, where do I start? So that's wheat country, and they're growing canola. They can do what they want with it. Here in the Willamette Valley, we're actually in a protected district. And so we're right now only limited to 500 total acres. That we can grow here. And that's because of the specialty seeds that are grown here. There's concern about the disease pressure getting into that, cross-pollinization, different things, whether it's right or wrong. That's kind of the problem that we have here, getting things going. It's state legislature. It's their stuff they put out that limited us to 500 acres. It's been that way for several years now. I wish we could do more. We're trying. But there's definite headwinds. I feel it's a great rotation for what we're doing here. This is mostly grass seed country. And so when you have folks growing grass and grass and grass, what becomes your main weed? More grass.
Yep.
And growing wheat, you can only control the grass in it to a certain extent, it being a grass itself. And so once I found out about canola and...
Oh, it's a natural fit there with a totally different crop than what guys are raising. Hey, Jason, we're up against a commercial break. Could you hang on for just a little bit more? We got a few more questions for you.
Absolutely.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2savethree.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
How do you know when to run your grain bin fans? There's an app for that. With the Steps GMS app, you can manually turn your fans on and off from your smartphone. You can also configure the Steps GMS app to automatically turn fans on when the humidity or temperature is ideal to keep your grain in top quality condition. Save yourself some time and take the guesswork out of managing your stored grain with the Steps GMS app. Contact us at stepsgms.com for more information.
As your corn crop grows and the ear begins to form, potassium is at a high demand, almost as high as nitrogen. The same is true for soybeans, with similar high demands of potassium during pod fill. Don't fall behind. Ensure your crop is getting its potassium with Catalyst. Catalyst by Actagro has been shown to be the best at entering the leaf when compared to other leading potassium products. Visit k-supercharged.com for more information.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
We know balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid has the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. Plus, the expertise to give you a recommendation based on your soils, your fields, and your goals. AgriLiquid has the phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrient products necessary to deliver the best results from a solid fertility program. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
In order to be the best farmer you can be, you've got to have a grain marketing plan. But what do you do when you're too busy out in the fields trying to maximize yield? Hi, I'm Darren Hefty. My brother Brian and I are always busy learning more about how to make our farm more successful. That's why we use Grain PhD to learn more about grain marketing and to work with our Grain PhD risk expert to create a complete grain marketing strategy. Visit grainphd.com to learn more about a free consultation for your operation. Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Talking with Jason out in Oregon right now, and we were chatting just before the break about how canola is a really nice rotational crop in an area that has a lot of grass seed production and wheat and so forth. But boy, there's some challenges when the rest of the state thinks, oh no, you might be bringing me a disease problem or something like that. Is there a certain disease they're really worried about, Jason?
Well, they're scared to death of blackleg. There's been some sclerotinia issues, but you know, there's so many other brassicas growing here that it's nothing new. You know, there's lots of turnips for the cover crop market growing here. Radishes, things like that. So it's really not any different than those, and those are unlimited acres. So we've been trying to educate other growers, you know, that look, guys, here's a good commodity crop you can grow that you don't have to sign a contract with a company to market it. You can do it on your own. We've really replaced wheat in our rotation with it because we're making about roughly the same amount per acre off of it. And like we were saying, it's a totally different rotation out of grass. It's really, I'm finding it really works well.
You know, as you look at just bringing a different crop into the area, that's awesome. You mentioned on the eastern side of Oregon, though, no restrictions. How big is canola getting in that part of the state?
Well, you know, there's enough going on in the PNW now that they actually put together, got reinstituted the Pacific Northwest Canola Association. Montana, far and away, has the most acres, followed by Idaho and Washington. Oregon has definitely dropped behind, or we're behind. It kind of has been ebbing and flowing, but the guys that are doing it love it. And it's just, you know, it's that educating your neighbors on it at a good deal. And, you know, it's like anything else new. Some guys just, you know, they do what they know.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I know it. It's hard to switch, and we all are guilty of it to some degree, that there's some things that I'm pretty comfortable with what I'm doing, and I'm not necessarily looking for improvement, but we really do need to challenge ourselves and always be looking for that. Do you have a local market that's processing the oil from the canola in Oregon, or where does the final product go to?
Well, the stuff that we're doing here in the Willamette Valley, actually, and that's part of the reason that we started doing it. I have a processor that's literally 10 miles down the road. Instead of having to haul wheat, for instance, to Portland, that's an hour, hour and a half, dealing with traffic in the city and all that kind of stuff. Absolutely. This is out here rural, you know, and it's really been handy. They're bringing in stuff from all over the place too. We can't come close to fill in their needs with only 500 acres, but that's working very well for us.
Excellent. Well, Jason, thank you. Really appreciate hearing about what's going on in the state of Oregon, and I know you've got some challenges there that growers in other parts of the country are not facing right now, and that was kind of nice to hear about that as well. Thanks for what you're doing, and good luck here going forward this year.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Bet. Let's head up to Manitoba right now. We've got Clayton with us. Clayton, how are you today?
Oh, doing well, thanks.
So we're talking canola here, and we were chatting with Pat up in North Dakota, and certainly there's some different challenges, and he's very aware of that right across the border versus what he's got and vice versa. You know, canola, the demand for it is certainly growing here on this side of the border. How about up in Canada?
Yeah, it seems to be fairly consistent. There's been a bit of trade hiccups this past year, but surprisingly, prices have maintained relatively well considering what the big picture looks like.
Yeah, yeah, that is important. So, you know, from an acre standpoint, what are acres of canola doing in Manitoba? Are they staying steady now going into this year? Is that the forecast?
Yeah, the forecast, I think, right now is fairly consistent. This past year, there was 3.2 million acres harvested, and I think going forward, it's probably anyone's best guess at this point for the province of Manitoba next year.
Pat was talking about flea beetles and what a challenge they've been in the state of North Dakota. Are you seeing that in Manitoba as well?
Yeah, the last probably 3 to 5 years have been pretty bad. For us personally, we've had to spray like a foliar insecticide for flea beetles probably, I think, 3 of the last 4 years. 1 year we sprayed twice, but yeah, it's been pretty tough.
You know, I was talking with Brian about that just over the break, and I said, you know, we do some daily crop scouting reports all over in the United States, and I'd mentioned that, yeah, we're getting a lot more questions and observations made that, hey, flea beetles are out there and they're growing in number. Are you finding anything that's working better? Are you finding different rates of seed treatment insecticide helping? Or is it just, hey, you're just stuck with coming in with the foliar app no matter what?
I think part of our problem is what we're seeing is a lot more striped flea beetles than we used to. Years ago, they were there was, I think they're called the crucifer beetle. They're all black, no stripes. They didn't seem as voracious as these striped ones. As for what seems to work, if a person can hold off seeding, maybe later in the planting season seems to help a little bit. Seed treatments like a double treatment, maybe Lumiderm seems to help a little too, but yeah, there's also pockets of it. I mean, one area might be worse than another. So it's really hard to pin down what is the best strategy.
I know there's a lot of concern, like we were just talking with Jason out in the state of Oregon, and he said they were concerned in their valley that there may be some disease issues like sclerotinia or blackleg and others. What have you found to be good solutions for fighting off any potential disease issues with canola?
Well, I guess we're kind of fortunate where we are. Rotation seems to be probably the better tool. We grow several different crops a year. So that's been our best thing. As far as what I guess a person could do if they had sclerotinia, there are fungicide options available if the crop you know, looks decent and a person wants to protect what yield potential they foresee there. But certainly for us, I think rotation is probably one of the better options.
Is there some work being done in Manitoba with populations, seeding populations, row spacing work? Are you finding some advantages going one direction or another there?
There is some ongoing research right now looking at planting canola into wider rows at varying seed populations. The use of a planters to plant canola as opposed to a more traditional like hoe or disc drill method. It's interesting that it seems fairly early on, and people that are experimenting with planters are going to keep going and keep trying with it. Other people that are comfortable and have consistent results with a disc drill or a hoe drill are probably going to keep going that way. But there is ongoing research, and kind of interested myself to see what it starts to point to.
Well, you mentioned the later planting date as well to try to avoid some of the flea beetles. What do you see with planting date? Is there kind of an ideal date that you say, if I can get it in by this point, I'm going to have more yield? Or do you have a fairly wide window for planting canola?
I think where we are kind of in just, we're, you know, about 100 miles north of the U.S. border. If the planting window is fairly wide, people will start kind of last week of April and we'll plant anywhere to say that first week of June, but that sweet spot seems to be kind of middle of May for the most part. We've seeded at the end of April, had good results. We've seeded at the end of May and had good results. The biggest thing we see for me personally with timing of seeding is if you're seeding in April, obviously frost is a risk, but the flea beetles seem to be the primary concern with that earlier seeding. If you get a little later, the crop seems to pop out of the ground a little faster, a little more vigor, and seems to perhaps grow past the more vulnerable stage when the flea beetles really have at it.
Yeah, there's a lot of things with canola production that really hold true for many of the other crops that we talk about on the show. And I really appreciate talking to you, Clayton, and getting some information about what's happening in Manitoba with canola production. And thinking about this 2020 growing season, I know there's a lot of uncertainty out there, but we wish you the best of luck and hope your crops turn out great.
Thanks. All the best to you guys. Take care.
You bet. Thank you. We'll be right back with more discussion on canola, and we'll be taking your calls as well at 844-44-AG-PHD.
We started utilizing the Duo React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season.
To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
You know a healthy crop is required for your best results. Simply put, balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products to deliver those results. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you with your fertility decisions. AgriLiquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I've been talking canola, as you can imagine. A lot of different things going on with that crop, and it's been kind of interesting just to learn a little bit more. Let's head back up to the state of North Dakota. We've got Ryan with us. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, one thing that I was thinking about is we were talking with Pat up in North Dakota earlier, and he said soybeans are on the rise and canola's on the rise. And I thought, what's more fun? Is it more fun raising soybeans? Is it more fun raising canola? Or is it just more fun raising both of them?
You tell me what the weather is going to be in the fall, and I'll give you a good answer to that.
I thought you were going to say, you tell me what the price is, and then I'll tell you the answer.
See, Brian determines his fun by which crop is going to make us some money so we get to farm again next year, and it's hard to argue against that.
That's quite logical, yeah, I'd have to agree.
Okay, but now let's say that you're raising soybeans and canola, because you're raising both crops, right?
We are, you know, and I think what it really comes down to is that capital utilization. When we were basically all small grains and canola, just the harvest window, there were so many acres to get over that soybeans is a nice way to utilize that combine over a longer window. But I will say that I do enjoy combining end of August in September more than later fall.
I agree with you on that 100%. Okay, so talk to me about your rotation then. How many years do you have in between a soybean crop and a canola crop? And have you fought some disease battles because you have those two both in the rotation?
Yeah, so we'll do a grass and then a broadleaf, grass, broadleaf, and then we'll try to switch up the canola and the soybean. So we get about 4 years in between canola. Now we're some heavier on canola acres and soybeans, so that's not a hard and fast rule. But then we'll also try to rotate between Roundup Ready canola and the Liberty Lynx just to get a few more genetic variability to fight off some of our blackleg issues that we have. You know, of course, soybeans and canola are both host to white mold, so it doesn't help in that. But Blackleg is really one of the problem areas in canola that having that stretched out rotation can help us with.
Yeah, the rotation is such a good thing for so many growers that I know we talk about the disease tolerance. We also were talking earlier with a grower about, boy, it's really helped with the weed pressure too, if he could just rotate and be able to get things under control. I like what you're doing with that 4-year rotation. It certainly gives you a lot of options to take care of problems.
It does. And then being able to rotate between a Liberty Link or a Roundup, you know, we've gone heavier Liberty Link varieties lately just to get some more modes of action in there, but there's definitely still good Roundup Readies out there, especially now with the next generation where we were having some issues, the first generation Roundup Ready, not being able to go those high rates. But now that we have the second generation Roundup Ready 2 and we can go the higher rates of Roundup, that's helping with the resistance as well.
You know, when we think about bug problems, Pat was talking a little bit earlier about in North Dakota seeing more flea beetles showing up. And we were talking up in Manitoba, Clayton was saying, yep, we're seeing more flea beetles. We're seeing more of the striped ones now instead of just the straight black flea beetles. And they seem to be a little bit tougher to get. What would you say your biggest challenge is? Would you say disease control is the biggest challenge, or is it an insect or a weed?
You know, historically, I would say disease between the black leg and the white mold. Anymore, we just spray fungicide for white mold. It's part of the budget. Yeah, it may not pay 1 or 2 years, but that fourth year, it's going to more than make up for anything that you didn't get the first 2 years, and in the third year, you'll make your profit. I would agree that the flea beetle issue is becoming more troublesome. One of the things that we have done, you know, historically, universities have said you got to get your canola in as early as possible. And I think a lot of that had to do with open pollinated varieties not being able to handle the heat. We've moved where we'll get all our small grains and our soybeans in typically before we start on canola. We want to give that insecticide a 2 week window. You know, we want that plant to pop out, still have some protection, and get growing right away instead of sitting in those cold soils and having the flea beetle have a chance to start chewing on it after that 2 week window.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. A lot of things that you learn over time. Growers certainly in your part of North Dakota have been doing canola for long enough now to get pretty darn good at this. I've been talking with Ryan up in North Dakota, sharing some secrets about canola production and the rotation that's successful on his farm. Ryan, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
All right. Thank you.
Let's head down to Oklahoma, and whenever we talk canola, we always end up in Oklahoma somehow. We've got Jeff with us right now. Jeff, how are you doing?
Doing great. How are you today?
Good, good. I know there have been some challenging market things here, and we've talked a little bit about some of the trade issues and so forth. You know, what's happening down in Oklahoma with canola production right now?
So right now, the last few years, we've seen a pretty major decrease in acreage. The economics just aren't there to support canola production. Our weather can be so fickle that, you know, we can have good years, bad years. It's just not as dependable as we would like it to be. And currently with the economics of the market, it's very, very difficult to pencil out a break even on canola.
What do you put into the rotation then on a broadleaf side? Do growers end up going to soybeans then on years where they can't go canola?
You know, and that's something down here in the Southern Plains. I've told people for years, our idea of a crop rotation is taking an 850-pound steer off of wheat pasture and putting a 400-pounder back on. So, you know, we've been primarily a winter wheat and stalker cattle region. There's getting to be more and more soybeans. You know, the genetics on soybeans have gotten better for our climate, and so we've got a lot of guys that are being successful with that. We've got a niche market with sesame that is becoming more popular, and cotton acres have been growing.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I guess I've heard a little about the sesame, but I hadn't heard a whole lot about that yet. How many acres is that getting to be? Is it getting to be a considerable amount of acres?
Not considerable. Like I said, it's still more of a niche market, so it's something that's primarily contracted through a company like Sesico or someone, and so it is all contract acres, so we're not seeing a huge explosion, but, you know, I know in my general vicinity, you know, we'll see, 5 to 10,000 acres of sesame production in, you know, a 50-mile circle around my farm.
Sure, sure. So what was 2019 like for growers in your area? What kind of crops did you have?
So 2018 would have been our harvested crop. So we grow winter canola as opposed to a spring canola like you were talking with Pat and Ryan over. And so it follows the same production cycle as our winter wheat. So June of 19, so the 18 planted crop. And we had major problems. Once again, our weather came in, and we got extremely, extremely wet in the spring. Had at one point an over 8-inch rain event and stayed wet. Had trouble getting in with the swathers, and the guys that did get it swathed had difficulties picking it up and harvesting it. So we were probably only harvested 40 to 50% of the acres that were planted.
Yeah, it was quite the 2019, no doubt about that. And the timing of the rains was just awful for a lot of growers, like you had mentioned here, trying to harvest winter canola. Yeah, what a challenge, no doubt about that. Jeff, really appreciate the information. Thanks for letting us know a little bit about what's happening in Oklahoma. I really hope that market turns around where this ends up being a real profitable crop there again.
Yeah, it's a great crop. We need to grow it. It has been fabulous for cleaning up grassy weeds, in our winter wheat production system, and seeing it increase yields following that rotation. So it is a crop that we need, and hopefully the markets will turn around and make it to where it's profitable for us to grow it again.
Absolutely. Well, Jeff, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and good luck here going into 2020.
Thank you very much.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, we've been talking about canola production. Perhaps this has brought up a few agronomic questions in your mind. If you have questions, we'd love to help you with those. You can give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We'll dive into that radio mailbag coming up right after this.
There's a new authority in town. New Authority Supreme Herbicide from FMC combines the best-in-class Group 14 PPO herbicide with the newest Group 15 herbicide for lasting residual control of water hemp, Palmer amaranth, kochia, pigweed, and other tough-resistant weeds. This exclusive liquid premix of single-application chemistries protects your soybeans from pre-plant to harvest. It also protects your bottom line. Authority Supreme Herbicide qualifies for the agronomic and economic incentives of the FMC Freedom Pass program. Rule your soybean fields with more authority than ever before with Authority Supreme Herbicide from FMC. More powerful preventative control isn't on the horizon, it's here. Visit your FMC retailer or fmccrop.com to learn more. Always read and follow all label directions, restrictions, and precautions for use. Authority Supreme Herbicide is not registered for sale or use in California. FMC and Authority are trademarks of FMC Corporation or an affiliate.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
Build with the best. When you choose Morton Buildings for your next farm storage building, you'll experience the Morton advantage at every step, starting before the walls even go up. Since the value of our buildings is in its ability to protect what you have stored inside, we ensure that every component is researched and tested to withstand the elements in all weather conditions. And we back it up with the strongest warranty in the business. Looks better, built stronger, lasts longer. Learn more at MortonBuildings.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. We're live in the Morton studio today. If you want to call into the show, it's 844-44-AG-PHD. Before we wrap up our canola discussion today, I just wanted to say this. So I mentioned fertility earlier. Drainage is also super important. We talk about that for all crops. And then the other big thing is weed control that I wanted to just mention. We spent a little bit of time talking about diseases and insects, but I just want to talk a little more about weed control. the nice thing with canola is you've got the option. Now, it depends on where you're at and what is available in your area and for your maturity and everything. But Roundup Ready, Liberty Link, Clearfield. So there are three big choices. And that's pretty much what a lot of people are running with, is one of those three. But here's my number one point. I'd really encourage you, start with a decent pre-emerge herbicide program. You don't have all the options in canola that you do in corn and soybeans, but you can still use some trifluralin. You don't have to use a real big rate, even a pint and a half of trifluralin, and that only costs about $4. You're going to get some decent control on grass and many of the small-seeded broadleaves. So first on the show today, we had Pat from up in North Dakota, and he was talking about kochia. Well, trifluralin, yeah, it's not going to get all your kochia, but is it going to kill half of them? Probably is. So at least you've got a lot of the weeds thinned out, and it's going to make it a lot easier post-emerge. If you've got Roundup-resistant weeds, you're probably going to have to go with Liberty Link, because the Clearfield, I don't really view that as a viable option for weed control most of the time, because you're talking about using Beyond, all right, an ALS herbicide. That's the thing. With Clearfield, it's tolerant to the ALS herbicides like Beyond, which would be the same thing as Raptor. Well, that's only going to kill non-ALS-resistant weeds. Well, unfortunately, kochia is ALS-resistant, water hemp's ALS-resistant, and there are many others out there, too, that are ALS-resistant. The other concern I have with those ALS products like Beyond or even Raptor is you got to be careful about what your rotation is. You can't just rotate to any crop, whereas with Roundup or Liberty, you can. There are no rotational restrictions with those herbicides. The other thing I'd throw in there is if you're trying to get grass control, extra grass control, it's really inexpensive. Clethodim is like $2, $3, $4 an acre, depending on the rate that you're using. So very inexpensive. You could start with trifluralin. Very inexpensive. You can follow up with clethodim. And that's just a question, are you going Roundup in Roundup Ready canola? Are you going Liberty in Liberty Link canola? And with Liberty, that price has come way down this year. Last thing I'll throw out with Liberty, make sure you throw ammonium sulfate with it. That is essential to help make that product work. You will see it work much better. And I guess I should throw one last thing in for Liberty. There are still no resistant weeds in the world for Liberty. So that is an enormous advantage. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right, Brian, first one comes from Riley. He is across the border in Canada. He said, hey, I heard Brian talking about fertilizer removal charts for crops today, and I was thinking about sunflower. I noticed that you don't have micronutrients on the removal part for sunflowers. I'm wondering if there's anything on sunflowers in terms of micronutrient needs.
Okay, so when we put this together, the fertilizer removal app, we got information from the International Plant Nutrition Institute. We worked together with them, and I would just say they didn't have the information on the micronutrients. So we did have to go to some other sources for some of the crops, and we just didn't get that done for sunflowers. So anyway, I don't think there's any reason why we can't get that on there. We will absolutely work on that.
All right. Thanks for the question, Riley. I got one from Jake, and he said, when using the 3-pre program ahead of my soybeans, I heard you guys mentioned a mix of a yellow, a PPO, and a metribuzin. So I did this last year, and I just wanted you to know it worked really well using Sonalan, Valor, and metribuzin. But I don't know if I've heard you mention about Roundup, and if you could mix Roundup or something else with that to add more burn down. Just wondering what you think.
Well, you could, but when it's Sonalan, that has to be instantly incorporated. So you're going to do tillage. Then if that's the case, what's the point in throwing Roundup in there? That's a waste of money. Now, if you're going Prowl, that's the no-till version of the yellows, the no-till version of Sonalan. Yes, it's not quite as good as Sonalan is, but still a decent product, Prowl. Then absolutely, you could throw Roundup in there. You could throw Gramoxone in there. You can throw AIM in there. I mean, you've got a lot of burn down options that could be added to heat up your yellow along with Valor and Metribuzin. Just don't forget, too, Valor and Metribuzin have fairly decent burn down activity on their own. One other thing you could throw in there as an adjuvant is crop oil, or I guess you could use methylated seed oil too. We've had those really heat up the burn down. So if you want to go that way, certainly a good option.
All right. You ready for us to jump into that call yet, Janelle? Not quite. Okay, quick question here, Brian, for you. This is from Brandon in Ontario, Canada. He said, we're doing a custom application business. Also been doing more custom soil sampling for growers. Heard you mention intensive one-acre grids. Just wondering why you chose grids over zones.
Well, it doesn't have to be grids, first of all. It's just if you're going to go zones, go much smaller zones. You know, I see some of these zones out there that are 20 acres. I'm not a believer. I am not a believer. From what I have seen, those are not accurate enough for me. Now, it all depends on where you're at. If you're going for, like in my area, the average yield around here is 160 bushel corn, maybe 170, and 45 to maybe 50 bushel beans. Okay, if that's what you're going for or less, it's probably not that big a deal that you have 1 acre grids or very small zones. But what we're talking about is double. I want 300 bushel corn and I want 100 bushel beans. Now, we're not there yet, but we're getting closer every year. And the big thing for me is I'm trying to wipe out a lot of the variability that's out there. That's what we see in so many of these soils. And what I tell people is I'm going to go 1 acre grids for maybe 3-4 years. And by then, with all my variable rate stuff, I should have evened things out. Now I can actually go back to some bigger grid sizes. And my dream someday is if we had a machine where we could go across every field and it would tell you by the square foot what's the fertility there. I mean, that would be amazing, because we know what crops need. We just need to get that soil balanced, get the fertility right for every acre.
Let's get back to the phone lines here. We've got Gary down in Texas. Gary, thanks for calling.
Hey, Darren and Brian, I didn't intend to talk to you, but Janelle suggested that I do, and I'll make it quick. I just heard Brian make a recommendation on a pre-emerge. The only thing we thought here in Texas on our Bermuda grass would be proud, and it's expensive, and it doesn't get the results unless we get the right rain. But yep, that's what I was looking for, Darren, is, and what he recommended may not work in Bermuda grass fields in Texas. I don't know, but he mentioned it. The second was Kleptodyne or something or other, but I missed the first one, and I was going to listen to y'all tonight and get that, but I'm not sure if I could spit it.
Yeah, so I think we were talking soybeans. I know we were talking soybeans there and when I had mentioned prowl, but you talk about prowl being expensive. It's around $10 to $15 an acre, depending on the use rate. There is a generic out there for it, so that's just a little bit less expensive. But yeah, I mean, prowl costs considerably more than trifluralin. And in terms of clethodim, that's the active ingredient from the old product Select or Select Max that are out there. And that is a really good grass killer that we use in a lot of row crops. So if you have a broadleaf crop, like let's say soybeans or canola that we were talking about today, you can use this clethodim and it will wipe out the grasses without hurting the broadleaf crops.
I'm so sorry. I missed on it. I didn't get the whole story, and I was thinking about Bermuda grass.
No problem.
And I was hoping there was something besides prowl.
I'll tell you what. We should really do a show on Bermuda grass someday. Janelle, why don't you mark that down? We'll do a show on Bermuda grass because we do get so many questions about that. And, yeah, you're much more limited on what you can do because, especially if you're trying to kill a grass in a grass crop, it just gets a lot tougher. But, I mean, in Bermuda grass, we've got plenty of options to kill the broadleafs out there. So what was your target? What are you trying to kill in your Bermuda grass?
Well, what I was after is we've got three invaders last year, too much rain, and it's southern crabgrass, barnyard grass, and signal grass, and we tried to hit them with facet ale, and we got some good, but that was on the post, Brian. And,
okay.
We did have a little luck on prowl last year, but
yep.
As y'all know, we're all over the board here, and it is extremely dry.
I'll tell you what, we're completely out of time today. We're going to get right back to this question tomorrow and spend a little time on this to open the show tomorrow, we'll definitely let you know how we turn out. You can even hang on for just a minute, Gary, and then we can talk to you a little more.
I'd be glad to. I just didn't want to waste y'all's time.
Yep, no problem.
No problem, Gary. Hey, thanks for listening to today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.